Welcome back to the Why Hockey Periodically Remembering the Old Days podcast. Because if you had told us, and that would be me and my wonderful co-host, Thomas Kulikowski, when we really started doing this together, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, that the Florida Panthers would win playoff series in 3 consecutive seasons, we would have told you, what on earth has happened to America? Quite a lot has happened to America, including the Florida Panthers becoming almost distressingly good.
See, there's like 2 people inside of me. Like one
inside of you, there are 2 wolves.
There, one completely agrees with you. If you told me when we first started talking, you know, that the Panthers were going to actually get it together and then have 3 years where they won a first round playoff matchup, and you know, had three regular seasons where we kind of did what they needed to do, I wouldn't believe you, just because it was so hard to conceptualize the Panthers figuring out the professional things they needed to figure out to be at that level. Like it just seemed too dysfunctional. But then the other part of me is like, given their pieces, given the money, you know, of the ownership that they have, that they print and that they have, you know, where they're located and some of the advantages of that location, on ice, off ice, you know, on ice being the cap and tax situation, off ice being the beach and the marinas and all of that. I would be like, it should happen 20 years in a row. It should happen 50 years in a row. It should happen 80. And, you know, I kind of stand by that. I think that's the one that I see now. And like, it's hard for me to believe that I never thought the Panthers could accomplish that sort of feat. I mean, it's a big feat, but for a contender, for a team like the Lightning, that's nothing. Like the Lightning, you'll never hear the Tampa Bay Lightning organization ever, ever, ever again say, hey, we made the playoffs 3 years in a row and we won the first round 3 years in a row. Because they got 3 cups, they've won with 2 different cores, they've won with 2 different coaches, you know, like it's just old hat to them. And that's hopefully what this core is going to make, you know, Florida be, you know, that this success in the early part of the playoffs we start to take for granted because it's old hat.
Can I say one thing about the Lightning? They were at one point owned by a guy with connections to the Yakuza and also owned by film executives who hired Barry Melrose as a head coach. So the Lightning were at one point also really this bad.
But they also made the Saul franchise. They were also involved in the Saul franchise.
Coolius and what's his face? Hold on. I will look it up because I don't remember. While we do that.
So, I will say this about the Lightning. The Lightning to me are a respectable rival. I hate them. I respect them. I admire them. And I do all of those 3 things pretty intensely. And I think a lot of the Floridians feel the same way. It's not like beating Toronto where you needed to do it because losing to Toronto is just inconceivable. Like, how can I live with myself? Beating, you know, losing to Tampa, it's different. You know, beating Tampa, you want to beat Tampa because you want to beat the best to win the best, you know, to win the best trophy. And, you know, it worked so well with Florida last year, taking on a big rival, taking on the Bruins and beating them in the first round. And then you come out of that first round with confidence where you don't care who the matchup is in 2, 3, and 4. You feel like you have a shot because you took down, you know, your big prey. I like that. I like that Florida did that, but I also have a ton of respect, more so to Tampa than Boston or Toronto, of what they've accomplished, what this core has accomplished, and that everything I want Florida to be, I want it is basically Tampa minus how absolutely pathetic they are with the salary cap, LTIR, and that.
You know, so Orin Cools, by the way, he is the man behind the Saw series. So you got that one correct. He was also behind Two and a Half Men. You can debate which one of these
can't
is more scary.
Can't win them all.
You can debate which one of these is scarier to you.
But did he get out before Ashton got in, or...
I don't know, because Two and a Half Men is not a show I ever think about other than remembering it exists.
Here's some fun fact. Not the Charlie Sheen guy, the other guy on Two and a Half Men, like the nerdy guy.
John Cryer?
Yes, John. I don't know his name. I know him from stuff.
You know him from stuff.
Yeah. Yes. He and Ashton Kutcher both dated Demi Moore, so that must have been a fun set.
There you go, 2000s, everybody. On the Lightning, I just want to make a couple of comments, because I think that talking about them, because the discourse about them right now, other than John Cooper's very stupid comment about goalies and skirts, you could have made that comment in a different way, and I know John Cooper will probably regret saying it that way at some point in the future, because it's not the way to say it. But the point on the Lightning I want to make is this, because I think people have jumped on the idea that this is the end of them being a contender, which, fair enough, I can understand why you would think that. Their cap situation is not good, and their guys are getting older, and Steven Stamkos could walk, we'll see. But I think the Lightning, being what they were, and contributing to one of my favorite running jokes of Y Hockey, which is that Vinny Viola's favorite team is the Tampa Bay Lightning. But there was a kernel of truth in that joke, which is he really admired Tampa because that's what he knew he had to make his team in order for them to be successful. Because the Lightning, for the last decade or so, have been maybe the best run team in professional sports. Whatever you think about the cap, whatever you think about shenanigans, like, they've been run beautifully. You can't run a sports team almost better than that.
Well, I would argue that the cap stuff is running your team well. It's not running your league well from a league office standpoint.
Fair enough. If you want to go to the Steve Dangle comment, it's not a league. Fair enough.
I give Lightning full play. I mean, it's not what I would do, but they are well run because their job is to win, and they're winning in the business and hockey side of it. So, and they have been for 20 years.
Yeah, and I think that them being who they were was really instrumental in getting Vinny Viola and the Florida Panthers management to figure out, okay, how do we become that, or whatever our version of that is? Because becoming that, and the enmity and the jealousy that fueled the rivalry, becomes what fueled the Panthers becoming what they are. I said this before, and I believe this fully. The Lightning doing what they did to Florida in 21, but mostly 22, is why they are where they are now. Because they took the right lessons from that series and said, we have got to be better. And Bill Zito took huge swings, and the Panthers took huge swings, because they wanted to be Tampa. Not just off the ice, but on it. And learn the lessons from what Tampa did on the ice. And the Panthers, as a playoff team now in two straight postseasons, have learned a lot about what it takes to win from the Lightning. And that is why this rivalry is so good. The Panthers disliked them so strongly because they knew they had to beat them. And they knew they had to beat them. And then the Lightning disliked the Panthers because now it's coming clear to them that the Panthers are beating the Lightning at their own game. And that fuels a great rivalry. And that's why I don't... Part of me, the fan part of you, wants the Lightning to now spiral into the abyss. But the other part of me says, if these two teams are constantly at each other's throats because they're having to constantly make each other better, it's better for the league because it could still be the best rivalry in hockey, and I think it might be. But also, it means the Panthers have to keep up their game. They can't be complacent because they know Tampa's going to come for them at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a positive of the divisional format of the playoffs is, you know, it gave the situation where Florida had to play Tampa so much that in a short while they could be the learning, you know, the learning mistake. And then, you know, by the end of an entry level contract of Lundell, you know, it's the
we're going to spend some time with Anton Lundell in this series, because there are a couple of players that I think really epitomize the evolution of this team from the first time they played Tampa to now.
But the bad thing about the division is the four-man stuff is like, I think you would get way more of that, and you'd get way more interesting of that if, you know, you were playing more teams in the playoffs. Because then you have a division like the Atlantic where, you know, the Atlantic has made itself stronger. Toronto maybe has gotten stronger only in the regular season. I mean, they've gotten stronger in the postseason because it's not as easy to roll over them. But, you know, Boston, for what their core is going through, it was a weaker core than Tampa, and it's still they haven't dropped out of the playoffs really yet. And it's all.
I mean, think about what was our discourse in the last couple of off seasons. Who's replacing one of these four teams, and no one has.
But you look at the other division in the East,
which is pathetic.
Which has just been the same two teams basically stagnating for multiple seasons, right? Because no one's really raising the bar. The Penguins have basically been stagnated in that wild cards area. Do they make it? Do they not? Same with the Islanders. You know, Devils are just in, just out. Same with this.
Yeah, you're right. And we could talk about the playoff format another day.
I want to go back to what you said about Cooper's presser, because I just want to get it out of the way. Since he wanted to save it to the end of his presser, I just want to get it out of his way. The skirt comment, I don't think I have to talk about it. My only comment is it was such an obviously stupid remark, and the response seems to be that everybody understands how obviously stupid it was, that hopefully we don't have to deal with it again. The other thing is, I hope he was a Wall Street lawyer, so it's a little different than, you know, I don't know if he was doing – he has trial or experience, but knowing him, he might. It wasn't a very convincing case about the goalies. His thing is – so he didn't see what was egregious and why goals were being overturned. Well, one goal wasn't overturned. It was never on the board. The second thing is he didn't see what was egregious about it because he's intentionally leaving out parts that actually go against the rules. He never mentions that it happens inside of the crease. If you listen to him, it sounds like this is all happening at the edge of the crease or outside of the crease or parts of the bodies that are outside of the crease. One would assume, but based on the way he's saying and the way it seems to be muddied and murkied and you know, it's hard to tell and this and that. And that's not the case. This all clearly happened inside the crease, and the Lightning player entered the crease of their own choice. Duclair was trying to kick free the puck, and instead he puts his leg around Bobrovsky's goalie glove so he can't cover it. So then Bobrovsky goes to use his other arm. He can't get around the leg that's in his way, and the stick hits the leg, and he drops the stick. So he's taken out both of the goalie's hands, and the goalie's stick are not able to get a loose puck in front of him, which are the only means of making the save. And incidental goaltender interference is, did you interfere inside the crease with a goalie doing his job? And did the player make all attempted to stay out of the crease, to do his best to stay out of the crease? By that definition, these are both so obviously no goals. And the second one, it was so obvious, it was never even called a goal.
You know what's funny about it? And I want to say, I completely agree with you. The first one was very black and white to me. Like, this is the definition of goalie interference that we have. And Sergei Bobrovsky, forget the stick, he can't play with one of his arms in the crease.
Yeah.
Like, that one was very obvious, yeah. And more obvious when you think. The second one, I kind of get where he's coming from, and I think, and I said this to you, and I said this multiple people last night, that if it was ruled a goal on the ice and Paul Maurice challenged it, I think it would have been a more difficult overturn.
Disagree. Because the Tampa Bay Lightning player does not have to enter the crease at any point. That's why it was overturned. There's no reason for him to be in the crease. He doesn't. That's not the only way to get out of the fight. And even if it was, that's still no reason to go into the crease and hit the goalie. There's no reason for him to be in the position he found himself in at the same time a puck was playable by a goalie and went into the net. No goal. Like, he could have spun the other way, away from Mikula and away from the goalie, and he still would have been a screen, you know, and the goal still would have went in, probably. But he didn't. He chose to spin to the other side into Bobrovsky, and he makes contact. He goes from outside the crease, spinning inside the crease, and hits the goalie. Again, hits the goalie through both of their through both of Bobrovsky's hands, and makes the stick fall out.
And I think the argument that frustrates me is, he said it's basically prison rules everywhere until you get to the net in the playoffs, and it's like.
But then he's complaining about Forsling on Duclair. He starts off saying that it was a clear penalty when Kevin Weeks, Dave Jackson, and we're talking on the broadcast how it was great discipline by Forsling.
I mean, John Cooper, we've already talked about him working the refs and other press conferences. Yeah. We'd see that a couple of years ago. So this is something of what he does. The thing with Cirelli that I noticed was he was flailing his stick around. Now, I understand that Nico Mikula is a very giant human being, and so to get your stick free, crazy things are going to happen. But, like, you still have to know where you are.
Yeah.
And that was the one reason why I was, again, it's not just because, look, we want the Panthers to win, but, like, why I understand that from the stick perspective and where his stick was and how I think his stick got into Bobrovsky's, you know, line of sight or vision, or maybe even hit his helmet, you know. And I don't agree that Bobrovsky gave up on the play. You have to look around Nico Mikula, who's 6 foot whatever, like 6 foot seven. You've got to look around a guy who's, you know, trying to get position and flailing his stick around. Like, I do want to say that Dave Jackson, you know, we always complain about NHL, all officiating. There's complaints about officiating in every single sport. And sometimes those rules analysts, there are some that are very good. And then there are Dr. Joe Macnick memes for a reason. That's a soccer one. And I think with Dave Jackson, I think his explanations last night on that were really good and very concise in saying, this is why I think this is goalie interference.
I think that these are video examples. I think that's how clear, like, to me, these are perfect examples. Like you said, the way that Dave Jackson explained it, the videos, the angles they got, you can see them clearly standing outside of the crease, going clearly fully inside of the crease. The goalie's there. The puck is coming through at the same time. The contact's there. They're driving through the body. It's not, and there's no push by the Florida defender. I mean, like, everything's there. And his whole thing was, first of all, he's wrong because goalies outside the crease, especially in the playoffs, they're, now it's a different standard, but the standard is risen.
Yeah, and that's what I want to say. Like, it's not necessarily prison rules for the goalies in the regular season. Let me be honest.
And in his point about the pads, shut the fuck up. Vasilevsky is the biggest offender of oversized pads in the league. He only thinks that goalies wear that much padding because his goalie is one of the only ones that seemingly doesn't have to follow the new goaltending equipment. I've been complaining about his chest protector for eons. I still don't think it's legal, even though it's a little slimmer now.
Can I make one point about John Cooper's lawyer experience? I did look it up on Wikipedia. I don't think they have any reason to be wrong here. He was a public defender in Michigan. So, look, we support all public defenders here. They have a very difficult job and they're underfunded. But this is one of those arguments where I'm not sure he had to, you know, it's one of those where it's like, he might have had a difficult client to work with.
He made six different. First of all, it was a penalty on Forsling. Then they're not calling enough in front of the nets, But like at the end of the day, he was still asking. Even if you just go down to his baseline, his whole argument was that they should have changed the rules or changed how they interpret the rules in the middle of that game because they've changed other rules to increase scoring and this would put more goals on the board. So doesn't that make sense? It was the stretchiest argument. And he couched all of that weird argument in that terrible skirt comment and with the fact that it wouldn't have changed the outcome of the series and likely even the game because Florida was the better team and they found ways to handle what was thrown at them and Tampa kept getting thrown off by things that were happening, which was evidenced by John Cooper's whole expression on the bench after the goal were overturned. Or not allowed.
There's one other point I want to make. Back to game two and remember the goalie interference challenge on, I think it was the first goal. It was either the first or the second. I don't remember. I think it was the first, right? The Bennett goal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, in the moment he challenged that and I'm watching that. And it was Wischusen and Callahan on that call. Or if you're watching it locally, that was the most baffling out of all of them. Like, what are you challenging it for? His own guy runs into Vasilevsky. And like, that was a really weird one. And that's where I think he has a view of goalie interference that is his view, his distinctly held view, that is not the view of goalie interference held by, you know, the rest of the league. And the other part of it that I found really interesting is, like, when George Ritzer's asked Paul Maurice about it in the press conference, and he's like, he's very, very careful with his words about the referees now because, you know, it's part of a running joke, I think, with him and the media, but also, you know, he doesn't want to get fined.
Well, I don't think he's going to get fined.
Oh, no, he's not. But he doesn't want to make a comment that's going to get the league on notice. So he's kind of like, you know, he was clearly frustrated with the officiating in the games in Tampa, and I understand that. And then he's like, well, I think the goalie interference call shows that these things wash out after series. And he's like, I'm not sure, but I believe it a little more now. Yeah. Which was kind of fun. It's a very Paul Maurice way of putting it.
Yeah. And like, listen, I thought the refs last night were atrocious. I thought the linesmen, linespeople have been just atrocious, to be honest with you. I've never seen more people kicked out of offensive zone draws.
That's been a story for the Panthers all season. A lot of players getting kicked out of draws.
And Barkov specifically. They keep kicking out Barkov. And I'm not sure why. Because sometimes he doesn't even move. And they kick him out. And he's not late to the circle. There's not an infraction by one of his wingers or something. I don't necessarily understand it. And I have to believe that the Panthers know what's going on, or they have an idea, or they're looking into it or they've already figured out it's not that big of a deal. But to me, it's something I've noticed. But the refs yesterday for both teams, I thought were bad. They missed like three calls on Tampa to start the game. Then they proceeded to miss some calls on Florida to even it up. I thought they were awful. I thought whoever was the official series manager or whatever they call them, the guy who manages the rotating refs and linesmen and stuff through a series, that person I think deserves the most blame. I thought that their finger was completely off the pulse of the games, of the moments. And I think that's why a series kind of that was being really professionally played by both teams for two games started to kind of get chaotic, but not in an entertaining way.
I mean, we have evidence of what chaotic Panthers Lightning games look like, and they don't look like that.
Yeah, there's more of that in the regular season. This was
back to 2021. Like, that was the chaos we're talking about.
Yeah, and like, but like, this was just weird. Like, the it basically allowed Tampa or Florida, and it was usually Tampa because they were chasing the series, so it made more sense for them to do it, but Florida did it too. But basically what would happen was you had the situation where if you do, you could get a 4-on-4 for 2 minutes, and you could pick somebody to take off, because all you would do is follow them around on a shift and slash them and hook them, and you just wait until they push you back. And as soon as they push you back, the refs are going to call coincidentals or they're going to call nothing. But they never – the one thing that the refs didn't do that they should have done was just call the one. That's how you get them to stop. Because what was happening was the Lightning or the – let's just use the Lightning. Cirelli was one of the guys who was doing it the most. So let's just use him because we won't use the Panther. Cirelli
– well, Sam Bennett would have been the guy, but he missed most of the series.
Yeah, Sam – like Cirelli would just dog somebody. Like Tarasenko would hit him, a clean hit, nothing bad. You know, they both pop off and they – and on a breakout pass, and they'd be skating into the – back into the play, into the neutral zone, and Cirelli would be in front, and he'd turn around and two-hand Tarasenko shin pads. Doesn't really hurt, but it could be called a penalty. It's not. The trailing ref would tell them to knock it off or whatever, and they would just keep sparring back and forth, and you know Cirelli would keep egging them on and escalating it a little bit. And then eventually Tarasenko would, you know, put him in a headlock or grapple him or pin him to the boards or punch him in the face, whatever, and then they take them both. So you saw in game four, they did that to Barkov. They just basically were like, they wanted to get Barkov off the ice for 2 minutes. They're like, we have to get Barkov off the ice. He's playing every other shift and he's killing us. So what they did was they recognized him for a couple shifts until they popped off his helmet. And then he's like, oh, fuck no, I'm not dealing with this. And he just started like face washing guys and like, you know, was holding off one guy, whatever. And then they called 2 minutes, but he never even punched the guy. He never did anything besides just stop himself from getting tackled to the ice. And it was 2 minutes, 4-on-4, and they scored. And then they did it again because they're like, that worked. They didn't get Barkov, but they got somebody else, and they scored again.
And then the Panthers scored a 4-on-4 last night. One last thing on officiating before we actually talk about the rest of the hockey, because I do want to talk about the actual hockey. The first two games of this series were and John Cooper mentioned it in the press conference. He's called it a pillow fight. I don't want to call it that. But I really think that it was drilled into the Panthers after the last two series, or everyone who was on those two series, you know, those rosters, knew, like, we are the better team 5-on-5. Don't get into it with them. Just don't. Because the only way they can beat us is the power play. And they didn't.
Well,
until game three
and four. It's a different thing. So, like, there has to be a reason. You don't antagonize just to antagonize, right? There has to be a payoff. So, you know, as the better team, and it's, you know, this is the Tampa Bay team that an MVP season from Kucherov is why they made the playoffs. That largely happened on the power play. Number one power play unit and Kucherov got them into the playoffs. You take that away, they're a non-playoff team and you should smoke them. That's kind of the thinking there. But ultimately, though, you're always going to have penalties. You're always going to have to kill penalties. So it's about what penalties you're going to kill. And there's, you know, it's a truism in hockey that there are good penalties to kill, and there are penalties that your team are more likely to kill off than others. You know, dumb high sticks or dumb over the puck over the glass, like deflating type penalties are harder to kill off. You know, the ones where you're sticking up for your teammate, or you know, you're going after somebody your team thinks is a punk or something like that, you can normally kill those off a little better, especially if they're not 5 minutes. So I don't necessarily think that that's what stopped them, but there was no – what was the value? There's going to be – I think there's more value in round two against Boston, But with Tampa, you know that you're not going to get them off their game except by beating them. Like, you saw the frustration start setting in when it wasn't – they were getting frustrated on power plays because they weren't scoring, because they weren't winning. You know, they're not used to being down 3-0, 2-0 in a series and then still being down in the game and not having anything going for them and Kucherov not scoring. They don't. That's what pisses them off. The glove to the face doesn't piss off Tampa anymore. Like they've evolved beyond that. But Boston still can lose mental battles, and I think that's why Tampa didn't do it because they kind of realized throughout the season, and I think, you know, in trying to start some stuff in the playoffs that. Panthers evolved from that too. They realized that, you know, the Panthers aren't going to be so reactive, and they're not going to be so reactive long term where it can tilt a series.
That's what I was maybe pointing towards. That was the difference between the first two Lightning series and this one.
I think you're going to see them be much more antagonistic in rounds 2 and 3 because definitely Carolina. I mean, if there's one team that the Panthers can 100% get under their, it's Carolina.
Or Toronto if they somehow have a comeback. But let's talk about this series and some aspects of it because we've done 30 minutes and we've mostly focused on the refs, which, fair enough, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NHL rulebook is
well, as clear
as mud.
Well, I mean, it was focusing on what Cooper did
I'm going to set the narrative and the tone of the conversation for the next day.
Yeah, because it's something that can be argued. It's not – what can't be argued is that they got beat, that they
– And they were the inferior team.
If they got Boston, it would have been – it might have been a different story. They got the worst matchup and they lost. And, you know, he doesn't want to say the things that he's thinking. That Vet Hedman looks like he could use a long summer. Vasilevsky looks like he could use another long summer. And if they want to keep this core together and win in the future, it might take losing a little in the short term and saying goodbye to guys and things like that. Now, I don't think Stamkos guys, but like Nick Paul kind of guys.
They're going to have a very interesting offseason, and I'm fascinated to see what they do.
Yeah.
The one difference between the Panthers and the Lightning when it comes to this, and the one area where I think Florida has become pretty clearly better, is you're going to be, as a good team, you're going to be losing depth players that are really important to what you do, and Tampa's obviously lost a ton of them. The Panthers have done a better job of finding replacements and grooming replacements than Tampa has. That's the one, and I mean, some of it is, but it's not even the draft picks. They don't have draft picks either. They've just done a better job of finding them than Tampa has.
I mean, we keep saying we'll talk about the on-ice product.
Let's do that now.
But I'll just finish with this. Tampa hasn't tried. Tampa is in between Vegas and Florida. They're not all looking for a free agent to sign for 1 year, and then, you know, they're less into that and more on, you know, trying to get guys in trades or trying to find long-term solutions and things like that. So I think that they might change that this off season. You know, if, you know, to retool, to try to get, you know, because Braden Point is 28. You're either trading him to start the rebuild or your rebuild starts in 8 years or 5-7 years, whatever's left of his contract. But you know what I mean? So they have to figure it out. But when we talk about on ice, I think the best quote I think came from talking about the number one goalie, your captain, your number one center. This was the series for them. You know, they were here through, you know, those series against Tampa that we've been talking about. They get paid $10 million a year to win this series. They're the ones that lead it. And if they don't show up, it's very unlikely you even get 5 games. So the games that the series that they've had, but specifically the coming back home in a game five where Tampa kind of has a little more life. You can tell they're starting to get the energy, the passion, the desire back, the hunger back. And 3-1 to 3-2, that's a big change. And Tampa knows that. And Barkov and Bobrovsky come out with, for Barkov, arguably his best game as a Panther.
His best playoff game. I mean, that's his best playoff game. Like, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, complete. Because he was a star offensively. He was a star defensively. And he was a star physically, I think, in this series. And that's what they need him to be to win a cup. And he was two-thirds of that last year on the cup run. You know, it kind of rotated sometimes what two of the three he'd be, but he's putting it together where he can be a series winner on his own. And you know, some of those games on the score sheet didn't look great, but the domination in the micro stats, in some of just his ability to control, like when he steps on the ice, is a completely different game. It's harder to tell than when McKinnon or McDavid step on the ice and change the tempo and the pace of the game and everything. But try to think about yesterday's game, especially in the first period, when there was a lot of guys falling down, a lot of passes like Tkachuk passing backwards from the slot and things like, you know, just all of that stuff. When Barkov gets on the ice, it's like, oh, okay, it's the playoffs. You know, same. It's kind of that feeling when Hedman's on, and when towards the end of the game when Hedman was starting to ramp it up, that he just has that poise, that QB sort of control the game, run the game thing, and it's something that I think we have to constantly say we're lucky to watch, and we need to be more mindful of it because, you know.
Speaking of things we take for granted.
Braden Point's already 28, if you know what I'm saying. Like, I can't believe Braden Point's 28. I was not.
Barkov's 28 too, but like, yeah. The funny thing about it is, like, his game, maybe some of the physical stuff, but all the other, like, the brain, the ability to do the things that he can do defensively, to just control a game and marshal a game, like, those things don't go away. Like, they age pretty gracefully.
I was almost saying this on the other podcast, but because when we were making footy references and stuff, but it's like, you know, like there's parts of him that are like Pirlo, and then there's parts of him that are like Ronaldinho. And it's just ridiculous that he's as a complete player as that.
And I think that this series, because he was really, really good in game one. He was good in games 2 through 4, but he wasn't the biggest story of those games. Look, he always is a story because he's Alexander Barkov, but he wasn't the guy.
Yeah, I agree.
And then he was the story in game five. He started the series as the story, and he ended it as the story. Like, you know, they won two games because of him, basically. Like, his dominance wins you, like, sets a marker for the series and then ends it. And if you can do that, if you could start a series with a dominant Barkov game and then have him be himself through, like, the middle of the series, then when the chips are down, he wins you a game that wins a series, ends the series. Like, that's pretty, pretty good. And he was really awesome in this series. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But there are other players. And, I mean, Bobrovsky, too.
Well, let's talk about, though, before we get into the different players, is because around those two anchors, and I want to throw out Forsling.
Oh, jeez.
Ekblad.
You know what was funny about game one? I thought Forsling had a better game than Barkov. I thought that was one of the Gus Forsling games of the series, of his career. He was so good.
Yeah. It's hard to choose one. I would say they're equally game one. But, like, the anchors. But around the anchors, the adjustments that were made. And listen, I'm not a sicko fan of Paul Maurice. I'm not somebody that I'm usually hard on coaches.
I mean, listen to our podcasts when they hired him and in the middle of last season when we were like, what's happening here? But you know,
because the one thing I now, maybe it was because he's a long tenured coach and everything, and some of the complaints in Winnipeg were about lack of adjustments, not having the finger on the pulse, not knowing when to do, like doing things too late, even if they're the right move, and stuff. I don't think you will see a Florida Panthers coach make so many adjustments and make adjustments swiftly when things are going well in the playoffs for the Florida Panthers. And to have them be intentional and to have them be successful. The Tkachuk, Barkov, Verhaeghe line. I mean, we talked about that, you know, the ability that getting Tarasenko and what it allows you and Erod over the summer, what that versatility of having an actual full top nine where guys can play on either wings or guys can play center or wing or guys can play in a checking role or a scoring role, that versatility. Now we can see what it actually does in action because we have a coach that's not afraid, is not waiting to make moves. I mean, he was making moves in game one, in game two, in game three, in game four. I mean, do we want to talk about the power play adjustment? In game one, after two periods, he's already making an adjustment to the power play, and it's resulting in winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, the play that they did to get that power play goal was really smart. Because you know, and I mentioned this after game one, like, you know they're all hedging on Tkachuk to Reinhart. You know exactly what the, and they all collapsed around that pass. It didn't happen in this series because everyone in video is going to go, take that away. So what do? They sneak someone to the back post. And, I mean, you have Barkov, who is as great a facilitator as there is, sliding it through everybody and nobody picks up Verhaeghe. Like, that's just a great adjustment with
and then later in the
coaching
series,
staff collectively.
They're starting to put, you know, they started to move Barkov around and they started to really pull Barkov away from the slot, from the home plate. They pulled him all the way to the half wall. Then they moved him up the half wall closer to the blue line. Then they had him more floating towards the center of the blue line and stuff. And then what they did, because then that started opening up space for Tkachuk down low. And then once Tampa figured that out, you know what they did? He just put up Tkachuk up top. He was like, all right, Kachuk's going to be like, we're just going to move Tkachuk to like the opposite of the net front. We're just going to have him do the half moon.
Like, they didn't score a ton of power play goals, but by the end of the series, you were getting these periods where they were just, they were having like 10 shots on three power plays.
They were making the penalty kill was never comfortable. They were always having to adjust. They were always like in between games, the power like they were making their video staff cut up new video, figure out what the Florida Panthers are doing, the adjustments they're making, and the best ways to counteract those adjustments and the most likely adjustments off of that will come up next game. And then getting the guys together, doing videotape, you know, hoping that that gets put into place on the ice during the game. And, you know, remember, we want you off the post more, get up and to the front of the crease of the hash marks. Don't you, cause we can't have you be those two steps. You don't have time for, you know, reminding them. That's something that so much goes on. And I think Maurice does the great job explaining this in the press conference when he says like his first rule is to do no harm. And after that, it's kind of matchups and that, cause there's so much, cause do no harm, because there's already so much that you can do. You have to pick and choose what you do because it has so much influence. And then the second thing is just really focus on matchups. And as the game goes on, let the players dictate things. Because as a coach, and I'm only talking from my experience coaching youth behind the bench, like there is so much that you're thinking about, that's so much going on during the game. There's no way you can do it all and do everything.
And,
right?
And I wanted to make the point about the line change in game five. Like, some said that it happened in the second period. No, it happened in the first period.
Yeah,
I noticed it with
like
about 2 minutes to go in the first. And Maurice was like in the press conference, all right, this isn't going well. And he knew. He's like, we were tight. And you could tell in the first period, like, they started okay, and then it got tight. Because they are, like, you know, they have, and I can't blame them, some of them had memories in their heads of what Tampa's done to them before. And they're thinking, we have got to win this game, end this tonight. We have to. And they were tight for that reason. And then Maurice does something that I don't think he has ever done, which is put Tkachuk and Barkov together at even strength. Like, we joked
he's done that before.
It just not as consistently as he did in this game, but just not super. It was rare.
Yeah.
Like, we've talked about how rare it is. But then he makes the, and he talked about it in the sense of, we are going to get Lundell, Lostarainen, and Reinhardt together. I'm going to put them on Braden Point. I'm going to take that line away, and I'm going to give Barkov more offensive matchups. Look what happened. The game-deciding goal, essentially, not the game-winning goal, but the game-deciding goal comes because they're on the ice against a matchup that's better for them.
And this is all we've been asking for since before Bob Bugner was hired. This is all, like, we've talked about this ad nauseum of, like, having a coaching staff, because it's not just Maurice. I mean, shout out to the video coach, the
John Kajemi. Yep.
I mean, like, there's so, and all the people on the bench, all the people on the ice at practice, the trainers, like, everything that goes into this. But, like, they're giving Tampa's coaching staff so much to deal with. They're dealing with all the stuff that's going on. It's calm to be dealing with all of that and have it be calm to the outside is another thing. And, you know, you can see it puts the players in the best way to succeed. And we've just been asking for a coach to be able to manage talent over 82 game season in the playoffs and have them be at their best in the moments where it matters the most.
Well, and Paul so Maurice far, was happened. Talking about during that stretch, the 2-7-1 stretch, yeah. where they were bad, and he's like, look, I'm not worried about it. You're going to be fine. Then they're fine.
We were saying.
And I think the other part about Paul Maurice and not having the pulse of whatever was going on in Winnipeg, like, maybe that's a personnel with the Jets thing, you know, maybe we get to that later.
I mean, there's the Jets front offices, I've been saying for a while. But
I think when you look at this Panthers situation and the way that he is able to, and with every coach that gets fired in the NHL and watching how badly it went for Andrew Brunette at the end of that Game 4, like, what Paul Maurice has figured out how to do in this game was, and this series was, I know when I need to be there. Because he always talked last year about the bunch is running itself. They know what they're doing. They know what, you know, what routes to take. They know what play to make. They know to, you know, they know to be encouraging and not yell, get the puck out. They know, like, encouraging them on to make the right play. Because I thought they had trouble clearing the zone last night at times. But I think that his willingness to make the call, but also knowing when is the right moment to do it, is really important, because he knows when his team needs, you know, the hairdryer, if we're going to go back to soccer, the Alex Ferguson hairdryer. He also knows what the situation is when it comes to making a decision, and then the decision coming at a point when the bench is going to react to it in the right way. That is really important, because you can see coaches scrambling and your team is going to react scrambly if your coach feels like he's scrambling to do something to change the momentum of a game, right? And when we think about other coaches in the playoffs, like, John Cooper is the best coach in the league and he got out-coached, and it wasn't, like, terribly, you know, close in that regard in this series. Now, some of it is he didn't have the horses, but also, like, when it comes to those little things that Paul Maurice is able to do, he has more tools and he uses them effectively. Yeah. You know, that's what really stands out to me from his coaching. And the other part of it that I think needs to be said is, go to the press conference in Game 4. All these coaches are intentional in what they say and what they do. Even if, you know, it's spontaneous what questions you're going to be asked. But he knows what he's thinking going into that press conference. And he's joking around after Game 4. Like, he's joking around about how hot the room is. And he's making references and directly dunking on George Richards. He wasn't dunking on him, but he made a really funny joke at George Richards' expense. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing there. He's keeping the mood light. And he's keeping his team light. because he knows, look, they're going to be a little bit of tension because it's the playoffs. And he talked about also, like, what are the expectations that I have to keep my team on the level and make sure that they know this are going to be all right. Now, we're going to wrap this up because there is more to come. I'll have another podcast coming before the start of the second series against probably Boston. But look, it's not over yet. Boston blew a 3-1 lead to a team we didn't think they'd blow a 3-1 lead to last time. This was a really important series for the Panthers to win. And it didn't matter who they played. It was an important series for them to win because last year they were the favorite in no series and they surprised everyone. This year they were the favorite. And we saw what happened 2 years ago when they were the favorite against Washington and they were really tight. And now
outside,
I think they can play a little bit
of the Rangers.
I think Carolina can beat them too.
Outside of the Rangers, they've beaten every team like this year, next year, like the teams that are going to matter to them in the East, they've beaten now in a series.
Yes, good
besides
point.
The Rangers. So that's huge. Like being able to say the three teams in our division that scare us the most and the team in the Metro that scares us the most, we've beaten in a series with these guys. With this coach is huge for a fan base. Definitely gives us more swagger for sure.
True. But I also think now the other part about it is like they did this without Sam Bennett because we remember what happened to Sam Bennett, 3 years ago and it completely changed the dynamic of the series. And Paul Maurice mentioned it too. Like Sam Bennett is an identity player and they didn't have an identity player in a series where you need your identity to win. And it's not like Anton Lundell plays the same way that Sam Bennett did. And I thought Lundell had a fantastic series, even though he wasn't doing a ton of counting stats. But he was fantastic in this series. And I thought that Stenlund stepped up when he had to, because I was worried about him being third-line center, and I think that he stepped up when he had to. I thought the depth stepped up when it had to. Lawrence had that game 3. Oposo played well when he got in. The depth was better.
And the points where they weren't good, again, and Maurice will say, as already said it himself, was more on Maurice losing some matchup battles because you're not going to win them all. And as much as we've talked about the coaching staff, like they haven't made mistakes, it's just that the mistakes that they've made haven't been costly and they've made way more big value moves.
And we talk about how many coaches get fired now and what is the identity of NHL coaches?
Over half of them.
Over half of them have been fired since Paul Maurice was hired. And Paul Maurice is about to become Alexander Barkov's longest tenured head coach. We've joked about that before. But I think that what you get your head coach for in moments like this are it's X's and O's, sure, but hockey is not a sport like soccer where tactical identity can vary so wildly between head coaches or the NFL.
And game to game.
It's a matter of managing your room and knowing the decisions you have to make and making them at the right times. That is important. And having the pulse of your team and managing your team's emotions. And he's exceptional at that. Like, he gets it in a way that I don't think any of us could have truly appreciated because, to my eye, like, I remember his Winnipeg tenure, little bit less of the second Carolina tenure. Anything before that is before my time of really paying attention to this. But I think that this is something that might even be new to him. He might have evolved as a coach in a way that he didn't expect because of the group he has and the situation that he has.
I'm sure.
And that's why he's a better coach now than he was. And we talked about it with vis-a-vis Andrew Brunette and how, like, the Andrew Brunette stuff that happened in the Nashville series against Vancouver reminds you a lot of what happened in the 2022 playoffs when Andrew Brunette got pretty badly outcoached by Laviolette, but didn't have the horses to get past him, and then by John Cooper, who did. And that's the difference. And the Sheldon Keefe talk when it comes to the Leafs and why he can't win these games in the postseason, like, that's the difference. Paul Maurice, not just the experience, but the know-how of how to evolve as a head coach. And look, a lot of coaches, older coaches, are out of the league now, are going to be out of the league because they haven't evolved. And Paul Maurice is the rare older coach, who has evolved and has changed and has become a better coach and has enjoyed becoming a better coach by virtue of being in this situation. And you're not going to get that with everybody. That's not possible. But the impressive nature of what he's done gives you hope that they can win going forward because the games are going to be harder. Boston's going to be harder because it's Boston. And whoever gets out of it's, again, probably Carolina, the Rangers. The Islanders still have a chance, but it's unlikely that they pull off something crazy because it's, you know, the Islanders. But it's like, you trust him in those situations. And also, against whoever comes out of the West, there are a lot of good teams in the West, you know? You trust him in those situations. Like, again, we're too far out afield, but look at what Colorado has done. Look at what, you know, what Vegas and Dallas have done to each other. Look at what Edmonton has done. Like, when you get to those series, if you get that far, you don't worry about how that bench is going to be feeling, and you don't worry about getting out-coached necessarily, because Paul Maurice is going to be like, look, we're playing really good teams. We're going to have stretches where we're not very good. But it's a matter of surviving those stretches and finding a way to minimize the number of them that happen and make sure those stretches are ones you can come back from. And then we can have our stretches and make them count. That's what's really important for this series. And this team, I wonder how the psychological lift of beating Tampa, and for a lot of those guys, they were there for all three of those series, or in some cases two. I wonder what the psychological lift is for saying, okay, now we did it. We can beat anybody. Because this was the one team we didn't have to play last year. And I think some of them wanted to play them last year. Yeah. So is there anything else you want to say about this series and the rest of this before we move to shows in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think with more time away from just the emotion and excitement of the win, maybe some of the X's and O's and individual performances, you know, breakdowns will be easier to do. But, like, it's not – like, the worst player on the ice was Kyle Okposo. It's not that he played bad. It's just that he was the most out-of-game shape on the ice for the Panthers, and it showed that way. But, you know, like, everybody was – everybody played their role well, and everybody's effort and focus for the most part. Like, you talked – there was times where they were tight. And I agree, there's definitely times where they're tight, and it was because maybe, like, the refs, like, in game five, I think the first period towards the end, everybody was getting tight on both teams and missing passes and falling down and stuff, because just the refs and the flow and the game was just so weird and like a circus more than chaos. It was kind of orchestrated circus that, like, you were right that they needed to be loosened up, and how Maurice did it was great. And that kind of stuff. But, like, that's what was, like, the negatives or the things that didn't work out. It was you didn't really see, like, guys committing the same mistake twice, or a player unable to get the puck out of the zone or into the zone, or somebody just not, you know, going more than a couple shifts where it just seemed like they weren't themselves. And that in of itself is a sign of things to come. If they get the luck, if they get the health, which is a good part luck, you know, I think that they will control their own destiny. If they have the performances that we know they're capable of, the goal of winning the third round and going back to a Stanley Cup and trying to take on the Western champ and see what happens is very realistic.
Anything else from the rest of the playoffs you want to mention? I mean, we'll have more shows in the future, let's just get one quick thought on the rest of the playoffs.
That was the two teams that I think by looking at the other series, those are the two best and most ready playoff teams. I mean, they were the teams that were playing playoff chess, and everybody else is just playing like high pace, high skill checkers, but it's still checkers. The West is just a pure speed and skill juggernaut right now. I don't know how that's going to go against the East, but it's nothing. I'm sure the Florida Panthers coaching staff is already figuring out what they're going to do if they get there, but not spending too much time on it. But like, and then in the East, man, I wasn't like the boss, like the other series in the East, they've
not been that interesting.
They made me a little too confident in the Florida. I honestly was thinking to myself, if Tampa can come back and beat Florida in the first round, they might go to the cup again. Like, you know, like, because they just – the other – like, New York is probably the team I'm most worried about. We haven't beat them yet, like I've said, but also they have the goalie. They have the MVP type player in Panarin that can just, you know, if he's on, break it open.
And they have a goalie that can win a series.
But they also have a coach. They have a coach that kind of knows, you know, some how to play with moments and that kind of stuff. So it's like, yeah, I could see it in the third round, depending who's healthy, who's not. Like, I could see it. But, you know, they're the only other team that looks like they have the playoff pedigree. It looks like they are actively, like, we're on a journey to the cup. You know, like, I feel like the placards with the pucks and shit that they fill up, like, has replaced the idea of, like, preparing as a team and having the journey. Maybe that's just something I'm saying in my head. But, like, the teams in the, like, the journey to the cup, like, with the Panthers, Maurice is laying out the narrative. He's been saying slay the dragon, like, 100,000 times that we've all been saying it now. ESPN, like, we're all saying it. But, you know, because Maurice wants us to say it, because that's the journey. We take our dragon down, then we take down the guy standing in our division, then we have a rematch with the Canes, or, you know, then we have to go to New York or whatever.
But, like, beating the Rangers, like, if it's the Rangers, again, they got to beat probably Boston first, and that's going to be a very difficult series because the Bruins are a very good playoff team, even if I don't think their roster can stack up what Florida can do. But think about the Rangers from a fan perspective, and they're not thinking about this, but think about a fan perspective. Until very, very recently, what was the fan base that probably drove you nuts the most as a fan? Think about this for a second. When you went to a game in Sunrise, which was the one? If it was Montreal number one, the Rangers were second, right? Which fan base drove you nuts when you went to the game and you saw 4,000 Rangers fans or 5,000 Rangers, right? That drove you nuts, right? Now, if you beat them, like, Tampa did it too, but, like, if you beat them, like, you're going, like, this was also a series that was interesting to me in the fact that not a ton, like, it wasn't the most talked about series, even though it's Tampa, Florida, there's all these other things going on. And one of the comments Elliot Friedman made on 32 Thoughts was, like, the Panthers don't mind playing Tampa because of the travel and also the Toronto media circus. Like,
yeah,
they were happy just doing their own thing, and it's going to pick up because you're probably playing Boston, and that means there's going to be more attention, and also it's the second round. But, like, then maybe it's New York, and there's definitely more attention if the Rangers are involved, and the Rangers could go to the Stanley Cup final. Like, it's going to matter. But I think about the way that this team can channel the fans, because the fan energy, obviously, at these games is awesome. And we've said for years, like, if they win, they'll show up and they'll be good. And the games in Sunrise have great atmospheres now. As I've said before, Sunrise, you have a great atmosphere if you go to those games there. It's a good rink to watch a game in. Like, it's going to pick up because also now the enmity between what we talked about before, which is the enmity between Florida and Tampa is a real rivalry. You could easily go to games in the other's rink, you know, and now it's that enmity between the Panthers and the Bruins, not just from last year, but, oh, I hate seeing those fans in that rank. You know, from a Panthers fan perspective, and from the Bruins fans, they're never going to get over that Game 7. How could they possibly get over that series? And then the Rangers, it's going to be the same thing. Like, even with the Panthers have as full a building as you can have, there are still Rangers fans there, and you're going to, you know, you want to beat them. Because I thought that the best aspect of Panthers fandom for the longest time was, these people are showing up. They think you have no fans. They're paying market value or marked up value for tickets, right? And they're going to these games and they're watching their team lose. You've just helped the Florida Panthers stay in Florida watching your team get beat by an inferior Panthers team. This is in the past. And now you're realizing, oh, this team we made fun of all the time and we got in, you know, it was basically a Rangers or Bruins home games for all those years. Oh, it ain't anymore, and this team is the pace setter in the Eastern Conference, and you have to be better than them. And there is a part of those fan bases, you know, and even some of the media that's like, really? This joke for all those years is now the team that is setting the tempo in the Eastern Conference, and we have to be better than them? That's part of the psychology of those series that we'll see if it happens. And I think that that it's going to be harder to beat the Bruins this time because they're not going to have the same level of pressure, and Jim Montgomery's not going to get out coached as badly as he did. And LaViolette has proven that he can get the most out of teams in the playoffs.
My final point will be, though, and as much as the fans definitely probably can get some more mileage out of, you know, playing the victim or the, like, the fan bases used to come in here and everything. But to me, I think we have to start molding into the idea of we want to beat the Rangers, not because they're annoying and because they're transplants and they come and they take our seats and stuff, because the Rangers are a franchise that's really the President's Trophy winner. We have to go through them. We want the New York media. New York is, the NHL offices are in New York. NHL Network's in New York. You know, they do the draft lottery out of Secaucus, you know, like it is.
Do you know what it's like to be trapped in Secaucus, New Jersey?
I wish Gary Bettman did. You want, like, it's now, okay, we want to beat New York, because if you beat New York, everybody knows you've won. You're in the papers as beating New York. The New York radio and sports radio in the morning is going to be pissed, going to be calling Bennett a piece of shit and all this stuff. It's going to be beautiful. And this is an original six franchise that's coming back into form that has – you know, Russian players that our Russian players are going to want to beat. And I can't wait. And if we get there. Yeah. And that's like the mentality is, like, now it's like, we want to beat teams for reasons of, we want to be dynasties. And so we have to beat the big team. So, you know,
if we're taking this to the logical extension, beat Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup final, but that one's for you. Anyway, we'll have more shows to come before whenever the next series starts, probably over the weekend, but I have some ideas and we're going to keep going. Sometimes I want to do podcasts after games. Maybe it depends on the game, but probably you're going to see more like this when it's after series are over, because then you can digest it in a different way. And I think that's better for the way we do business. But yeah, we'll say,
I mean, I'm going to be honest, like, after a hockey game, I don't have much mental. I mean, even like the day after, especially these big playoff games, it's still hard for me to, like, I'm much more easy in the game, you know, like, it's,
we'll
just,
do a Steve Dangle live stream of the game. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. We probably can't do that.
But like when the ref blew the whistle and the puck was lying there, I jumped out and I was probably like a 9 out of 10 volume going, are you fucking kidding me, Stripes? It's right in front of your face. You can't, you know, I was just going off. And after the game, it's, you know, all of that energy. I just really experience a hockey game, you know, especially these playoff games, man, it is great. Living vicariously through other professional athletes, or other people who are professional athletes, not other professional athletes, because I am not a professional athlete.
Oh, we are very much the opposite of that.
Anyway, I'm a professional marketer.
Woo-woo. True. And I am a professional media professional, sort of. Anyway, we will talk to you again with more shows before the next series starts. And until then, good night and good hockey.